Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Doesn't it seem like Mitt Romney has been running for president forever? In 2008, despite spending millions of dollars, much of it his own money, he dropped out of the Republican primary race. And 4 years later, he's trailing former House Speaker Newt Gingrich in several polls, with just a month to go before the Iowa caucuses. In fact, listen to what Gingrich told ABC's Jake Tapper last night.
I mean, it's very hard not to look at the recent polls and think that the odds are very high I'm going to be the nominee.
So what about Mitt Romney? The cover of the new Time magazine shows a photo of him under the headline, "Why Don't They Like Me?" The cover story of this weekend's New York Times magazine may outline some of the reasons, but it also paints a picture of the campaign's defiant reaction to the "anybody but Mitt" movement. He has a message, and he's sticking to it, let the chips fall where they may. Robert Draper is a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine. He wrote the story that will appear this weekend, and he joins us from the Christian Science Monitor studio in Washington. Robert, welcome.
Thanks very much, Monica.
Your story starts with Romney speaking to local businessmen in Iowa, the sort of made-for-TV roundtable event we're so familiar with. Tell us about that, and what do you think it says about the Romney message this time around?
Sure. This took place in October in a small town in Iowa named Trainer, Iowa, and it was a business roundtable consisting of the candidate and about a dozen or so participants who were from various walks of small business life in western Iowa. The conversation focused exclusively on business-related issues, on tax cuts, on regulation, pretty stock stuff. And what it did was give Romney an opportunity to highlight how conversant he is in those issues. And, you know, it was a sort of a remarkable display of his ability to spew out entrepreneurial minutia. But it was also something else, or rather, it was interesting for what it was not. It was not free form. It was carefully circumscribed around that one area with which Romney clearly shows expertise, and that's business and the economy. And this is, you know, the kind of meta message, the Uber message of the Romney campaign. It presupposes that we have a one-issue election before us, and that issue is the economy. It plays to Romney's strengths, and he's going to stick to that issue. Ultimately, the election will be a referendum on Obama's supposedly failed performance on the economy and Romney's comparative expertise. It remains to be seen whether that's going to be ultimately a satisfactory circumscription of a particular candidate for the voters.
Well, you portray a candidate who seems sort of unknowable, stiff, with the perfect hair. But you say that's exactly the way his campaign wants it to be. In fact, the headline on your story inside the magazine is "Building the Better Mitt Bot." Explain that.
Well, basically what it's getting at is that the campaign realizes who they've got. They've got a highly intelligent candidate, very well-versed on economic issues, a very intellectually curious man who doesn't commit a lot of unforced errors, but he's not good at all at retail politics. And so why pretend otherwise? Why put him out there where he can basically showcase his discomfort socially? Instead, better to have him speak in the one-minute sound bites which he has mastered in debates, better to have him at business roundtables, better to have him criticizing Barack Obama whenever possible, but better as well to avoid any opportunity for him to have to show off empathy skills that he in fact lacks. And so the campaign has just kind of come around to recognizing that there are certain things Romney can't do well. It's interesting, you know, I was thinking about it the other day that this is a man who excelled in the business arena. And it reminds me kind of when the great basketball player Michael Jordan decided to try his hand at baseball. You could see some of that athleticism transfer to the baseball diamond. But at other times you'd think, why did you leave your day job? You know, and watching Romney struggle to connect with average voters, you can't help but think that this is a guy who whose many skills in terms of a business environment just simply don't translate to politics.
Well, while we're on the sports analogy, his campaign manager compares Romney to Michael Vick, and I'm having a little trouble with that comparison. How does that work?
It's the unlikeliest analogy I think I've ever heard. But Stuart Stevens, his chief strategist, was basically saying that Michael Vick, the very mobile, dynamic quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles,
but who was convicted of running a dogfighting ring.
But now, having served time in prison, is starring, or at least was before he was injured, for the Philadelphia Eagles, and who's great at improvisational skill, but not so great at working within a very structured system. What Stuart Stevens was saying to me is, you know, our philosophy is, why turn a Michael Vick into something he's not? Don't make him a great pocket quarterback. Make him a great rollout quarterback. Allow him to accentuate his own skills. So they're doing that with Romney. Of course, Romney is the exact opposite of Michael Vick. Romney is not great at improvising. You don't want to put Romney out in a carefree environment where he can be spontaneous. Instead, you want to keep him in the pocket, and that pocket is largely business. So that's their determination, to keep him in these areas in which he can excel and to avoid, like the plague, those in which he's not likely to.
So how is that playing out on the ground, especially in Iowa? What does he need to do differently this time around?
It remains to be seen. The view among the campaign has been that he doesn't have to win Iowa. And this is a departure from 2008, when the whole campaign strategy for Romney was to win the early primaries of Iowa, the Iowa caucuses, and then the New Hampshire primary, and basically clear the field as early as possible. They've decided that they don't have to do that anymore, that if he shows reasonably well in Iowa and then wins New Hampshire, then he can go on to South Carolina, Michigan, and Florida, and Nevada, and do well in those. However, there's an opportunity for him to win in Iowa. The social conservatives, who tend to dominate the caucuses there, have yet to coalesce around a particular candidate. Michelle Bachmann, Herman Cain, Rick Perry, a number of people have been looked at by caucus goers, and those candidates have more or less faded from view. Now Newt Gingrich is emerging, but the thinking behind them winning Iowa has been a sort of victory by attrition, which is to basically not commit any unforced errors, stay within this business pocket, and allow everybody else to fail. Now, with the emergence of Newt Gingrich, that's not going to be a workable strategy in Iowa, and they're clearly going to have to improvise. And whether they ultimately decide that the thing to do is to pull away from Iowa so as not to appear to have fought hard only to lose, and lose badly to Gingrich, or to go ahead and take it to Gingrich and let the chips fall where they may.
And Robert, it seems like we hear a lot about the life stories of the other candidates, maybe more than we really want to know sometimes. But you write in your piece that Mitt Romney maintains an uneasy distance from his own life story, especially his Mormon faith. That was such a big deal the last time around. Is he avoiding his faith this time?
Yes, is the short answer. When asked about it, he'll give as brief an answer as possible. In Parade magazine, as I understand it, David Gergen did an interview with him in which it's discussed. But this is not the foot forward that the Romney campaign wishes to put. They still believe that social conservatives in Iowa, and for that matter, Southerners, say, in South Carolina, are uneasy about his Mormon faith. But to your larger point, Monica, it's remarkable to contrast Barack Obama, who ran his entire campaign in 2008 through his personal narrative. So much of that campaign was about who he is. And you see other candidates or other attractive politicians like Marco Rubio who do the same thing. Romney, as you mentioned, has this kind of aversion to his biography because it's steeped in things such as Mormonism, a life of privilege, being the son of a prominent politician, George Romney, and then finally being a governor in a heavily Democratic state where the art of compromise was a paramount thing for him, a paramount weapon for him. These are not easy things for a Republican politician to talk about.
And Mitt Romney can't seem to get away from these questions about being a flip-flopper. He was on Fox News being interviewed by Bret Baier this week, and Baier asked about this, saying to Romney, "Your critics charge you make decisions on political expediency, not core convictions." And here's Romney's response.
My view is, you can look at what I've written in my book. You can look at a person who has devoted his life to his family, to his faith, to his country, and I'm running for president because of the things I believe I think I can do to help this country.
How has he been responding to these charges on the trail that you've seen in Iowa?
They haven't come up often. When they do, in the occasional town halls that he does, he's allowed to give somewhat longer answers, but he tries to steer away from them. He instead goes back to, I've been essentially a constant, married to the same woman, fresh out of high school. People have a good sense of who I am. And then turns it back and says that, you know, the ultimate flip-flopper is Barack Obama, who promised to be inclusive and yet who has been a divisive force in American politics. But this is going to dog him throughout both the primary campaign and if he succeeds in becoming the nominee in the general election. I mean, there's no question that the Obama campaign is going to focus on Romney as this inveterate flip-flopper, and where it goes to is the sort of overall question of who is Mitt Romney? What does he stand for? And I think that's a question that voters still struggle with, though Romney has said, you know, he said in a debate, you know, a few weeks ago, I think people know me pretty well. I'm not sure that's true. People are familiar with him. He has high name ID. They've seen him in a million debates, and they've seen him now run for president twice. That's altogether different from having a core sense of who he is. People had a sense of who George W. Bush is. They're developing a sense of who Barack Obama is. And I also think they have a strong sense of who Newt Gingrich is. And no matter what the media comes up with in terms of interesting investigative reports about Gingrich's relationship with his clients, the degree to which, if at all, he was a lobbyist. People still see a record, still know that this man was sort of the father of the modern conservative movement. They can't say that about Mitt Romney. And so that's why these issues are going to be really persistent issues for him going forward.
The message in Romney's first TV ad in New Hampshire goes directly to President Obama, saying Obama isn't working. But that ad also takes Barack Obama's words completely out of context. And Romney's campaign basically bragged about it and didn't back away from the ad. Is that a sign, do you think, of what's to come for Romney, that they're going to play hardball?
That's a sign of what Mitt Romney has always been. And I think that Rick Perry, for example, committed the misjudgment of thinking that because this is this Ivy League, very sort of genteel, starchy Mormon guy, that he's not going to be able to commit himself to an alley fight. And in fact, Romney's always been a very, very tough candidate. He had no qualms whatsoever about taking hard swings against John McCain in the last go-round in 2008. And I suspect that we'll be seeing plenty of this, on top of which Romney has a very, very professional campaign staff, but they are that staff is rife with veteran opposition researchers, with guys like Stuart Stevens and Rush Schrieffer, who, when they worked for the George W. Bush campaign, designed the windsurfing ad on John Kerry, showing him as a guy who would sort of move back and forth with whatever the prevailing breeze was. No one in Romney world is going to shy from taking a swing, even if it's a low blow, even if it's out of context. No, I think we can absolutely expect to see more of this as the campaign goes on.
And finally, Robert, the thing that says it all to me when I read your article is that at the very end, you asked Doug Gross, Romney's Iowa campaign manager in 2008, who's not working for him this time around, whether he has any reservations as to whether Romney would be a good president. What did he say?
He said, yes. The question that Gross had and continues to have is when Romney is required to make a tough decision, does he have a core, does he have a center that's going to help drive a decision and allow him to stick with it? And he said, I honestly don't know that. And I found that remarkable. And what does that go to? Again, it goes to this question of if we don't have a strong sense of who Mitt Romney is, then can we really envision what he will be like as a leader, as opposed to, as I mentioned in my story, a guy who will manage our stock portfolios? I mean, we have a sense of his competence. We don't have so much of a sense of either his vision or his determination. We do have a sense of his ambition, but I'm not sure that's going to be enough of a compelling factor for voters to vote for him.
That's Robert Draper. His cover story on Mitt Romney is in this weekend's New York Times Magazine. Robert, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Sure, my pleasure.